welcome back once again for the 315th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. Always a good time. I'm glad you're joining us. If you are new, I appreciate you giving the show a chance. I hope you'll stick around for the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway mark of the show, and I will put it in its own separate thing in case you just don't want to. But I suggest you give it a chance. I think it'll be more entertaining than what you think it is. But we do have that. That'll be roughly the halfway point of the show. So, like I say, listen. Or don't. I do appreciate you joining us. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy to pay those tithes. We got the one and only snail mail. It's right here on the description page for the show, Radio Albion. That's it. Those crypto addresses are Sven's from before he went away. I can't get to those, so it's the snail mail. There's no other. So let's go into that listener supporter mailbag. Triangle Whip writes, GPD, from what I've learned, Ukraine was Khazaria, however many hundreds of years ago. I do wonder. Oh, yeah, no, our own Dr. Johnson's got quite a bit on that. He's done quite a bit of work on that. And I do think that a part of what we've seen with this whole Ukraine thing was the new Khazaria project. Doesn't look like it's necessarily going the way they planned. I don't know. But I do think there's a reason they're exterminating so many actual Ukrainians. Fallback plan in case the whole Israel thing doesn't work. Again, they're going to get our own Dr. Johnson has done a lot on that. And he's way more researched on it than I am. But no, definitely, you're not wrong. You don't need to wonder. It's a real thing. That wraps up. That's it. I'm just 2 minutes into the show. And I've already gave you the support information and gone through the entirety of the listener supporter mailbag. Doesn't take long. So we can keep on trucking. We're saving our time. We value our time here. And that's what I thought we'd start off talking about, is the value of time. I may be a little preachy, by the way, here and there. I know I just made it a point earlier to say I put the Christian specific thing, you know, on its own later. But you know, I can't help it because I view everything, a lot of things, I guess I should say, with a spiritual context. So sometimes I am going to throw that in. I ain't preaching at you early though. But the value of time, how we value it, you know, it's a commodity. You become more aware of this the older you get. And I've talked about this before because I'm highly aware of it. And I look around me and people don't value their time. They don't. I myself, you know, part of this regret, one of the reasons I bring this up and I've brought it up before is because of regret on my part. I look back and I wasted time. I did. I wasted so much damn time in my life. And now there's way fewer ahead than there is before and you can't get it back. You blow through it, and then you realize you can't get it back. It's a commodity, and it's a commodity when you think about it. It's a commodity, and it's acknowledged as such by the way we talk about it. How are you spending your time? You know? Talk about, oh, that guy, he just keeps wasting my time. We don't think of it as commodity, and yet in our very language of how we refer to the time we have, we actually use the language of a commodity. You know, value my time doing this, that, or the other. This guy wants to waste my time. I don't want to talk to this guy. He always tries to waste my time. How do you spend your days? How do you spend your time? Oh, you were off. What did you spend your time doing? We use the language of commodity, and yet we lose sight that time is a commodity. We're all familiar with how this saying, you know, a rich man will say, hey, time is money. I ain't got time to mess with you. Time is money. It's a commodity. More valuable than money. Hear me now. Time is more valuable than money. When you think you got a bunch of it, you don't appreciate that. But it is. Time is more valuable for money. See, you can lose money. You can go broke. You can go broke. But you know, you can turn around and make it back. It may take a while, but you can make it back. A man who has the ability to earn, say, $1 million, although that ain't the money it used to be, but for those of us that are poor, still a lot of money. Now you ain't nothing unless you're a billionaire now. There ain't nobody talk about you unless you're a billionaire now. But back in the day, it's something to be a millionaire. If a man has the ability to manage money and things such as a financial wherewithal to become a millionaire, and let's say things go south and he goes broke, he still has this up here. I'm pointing to my head like y'all can see it. He can always turn around, start over, because he started from the beginning, probably with not much. And eventually he can make that money back. Now he's not literally making the same money that he lost back, but he can get back to that amount. He can work at it and turn around, and he has $1 million again. We say he made that money back. Time, on the other hand, is like being given a lump sum, you know? You're given a lump sum of money. And you can spend it however you want to. You're given that $1 million in a lump sum. It was gifted to you. Hear me now. You didn't earn it. You were gifted. You inherited $1 million. And you can spend it. You're going to live off of this $1 million. And it sounds like a lot of money. But when you start figuring up, if you're spending it and there's nothing coming back in, you're going to find out real quick. You get broke. That happened to people in the past. Happened to people in the past, like win the lottery, you know, and they wind up broke because they get this lump sum of money. It's more money than they've ever dreamed about in their life. And they start spending off of it and living off of it and acting a fool with it. And pretty soon they're broke again. You're given a lump sum of money and you're going to live off of this rest of your life. It's got to last you the rest of your life. And you can't earn any more. Here's the stipulation. You cannot earn any more. What you're going to do? You know, you're going to run through it. It's always depleting. And unlike money, when it's gone, you can't earn it back. You can't start over and earn it back. Once you're broke, and we're all going to go broke, the day is going to come when you breathe your last, when you're done on this world, and you're going to go broke and you can't make it back. Then you're going to be like, well, how did I spend it? How much of it did I waste? Time is a commodity. Time is a gift of God. This is the part where I'll be a little bit preachy. Where does it come from? Somebody gave you the $1 million to live off of. Where does the time come from? Time is a gift bestowed upon you by God. How do you spend it? How do you value it? You know, I was thinking the other day how cheap we sell our time. You know, because slavery exists today, by the way. They tell you you're free and you're not. Just get hired on somewhere, become a wage slave and see. Look for the dynamic. I know most of y'all have jobs and I'm not ridiculing you for that. I know that's just, that speaks to the way the society is intentionally structured to keep people in servitude. You know, it's pretty hard to break out of that. But if you look at your life, wage slaving, and look at that dynamic, you know, you look at that dynamic, the power dynamic, it's the same thing. It's a slave-master relationship. Now, the tricky part of that is it's voluntary. You can quit. You know, you can do like the old Johnny Paycheck song and tell the boss to take this job and shove it. But more than likely, you're going to have to go sign on with another slave master. How do you spend that time? We sell it. For most people, you work for a living. I've spent my life, vast majority of my life, working for a living, selling my time. This gets painful the older you get, because you look back and that time is gone. You can't get it back. And what did you sell it for? Depending on where you live, like where I live here in Texas, if you're just a regular working people, and again, it's going to vary. You know, California, New York, we're talking completely different numbers because the cost of living is different. But I'm just going to use this as just a generic example because the point stands regardless of the numbers here. But if you told somebody, I'll hire you on, and they're going to say, what does it pay? What you're negotiating is what you're going to sell your time for. Well, I'll pay you $25 an hour. A lot of people, yeah, that's good money. Hell yeah. $25 an hour, man. And that comes out to this much money a week and this much money a month. I can make my car payments. You see, that's how they keep you enslaved. You get these payments and I can do it. $25 an hour. See, the trick is they get you to view your time as worthless. You're looking at this time, which is a gift to you from God, and you view it as worthless. I guarantee you, if you knew you had 1 week left to live and somebody told you, hey, if you'll sell me that week of your life that you have left to live, I'll give you $25 an hour for it. You're not going to jump all over it because then you're going to be painfully aware of what it's worth, right? We view, the younger you are especially, but we tend to view our time as worthless. We have this big pile of it, we think. We don't actually know how big the pile is because we don't know how long we have. And when somebody says, I will purchase this from you for $25 an hour, and we think that's a good deal, when in reality, we're basically giving it away. Now, I want to say again, I'm not criticizing people for working for a living. I'm not. This is to speak to the way our society is structured, to keep people in servitude and to not value our time. It's funny when you're selling your time to somebody. They purchased it. I said earlier, you're always going to see that slave master dynamic in your employment. And once you sell them your time, now you see people get upset. People get upset and they'll be like, you know, because their bosses, their job, their employer acts entitled, don't they? They act entitled to your time. Well, of course they do, because they purchased it. They're buying it. Next time you get mad because your boss, your job, acts so entitled to your time and how you spend it, remember, you're the one that's selling it to them. So, of course, you know, if you bought a car from somebody and then they showed back up and wanted to drive the car, you'd be like, no, you're not entitled to it anymore. You sold it to me. Time is the same way. You sell that time to them and they're entitled to it. That's why you're at your job for, say, 10 hours a day. They're going to tell you what to do. They're going to tell you, you can do this, you can't do that. You know, you're taking too many bathroom breaks. We'll allow you 30 minutes, an hour, whatever, for lunch. You sell that time, and they're the ones entitled to it. You've got to be there at whatever time in the morning. You can clock out at lunch. You can clock out at 7 o'clock at night, whatever. Then after that, you have a little bit of time to spend how you want to, which usually by then you're going to be so damn tired. All you can do is go home, take a shower, eat something, maybe watch some programming on your TV and go to bed. And then the alarm goes off the next day. How do you know you're basically a slave? When you have to wake up with an alarm clock and you wake up and that first thing, again, I'm speaking from experience. The alarm goes off and the first thing that rattles through your mind is, I've got to do this again today because you sold your time. You ever find it funny? Like, you have a job. They pay you by the hour. And you clock in at, say, 8 o'clock. Let's say you clock in at your job every day at 8 o'clock. And maybe you show up at 8:05, 10 after 8, and clock in. If it happens once, they may not say anything. But let it happen twice in a week. And what do? They act like the sky is falling. Right? It seems silly when you think about it, logically. Because they're not paying you. It's not like you're ripping them off. It's not like you somehow clocked in on the way to work and showed up late. And you robbed them of that 10 minutes of time. It's not costing them anything. You know? It's not costing them a damn thing. But they will get so upset and so wound up over you coming in 10 minutes late every day. Why? Because they're entitled to that time. You agreed to sell them that time. And you're holding 10 minutes back for yourself. It doesn't matter that they're not paying you for that 10 minutes. It's not costing them. You're not ripping them off, really, because they're not having to pay you because you weren't there. You don't clock in until you show up at the job. But they get really upset. They may even fire you. Over what? You see? It's that dynamic that goes back to that slave master. It's about control. Goes back to that slave master relationship. Again, people got to work. That's the way the society is structured. But you at least should see it for what it is. Because then you won't get so upset. You understand that that's just the dynamic. And again, you got to work. You got to pay your bills. But you sell them that time. A commodity you can't get back. You ever known anybody that, like, they spent their whole lives, you know, it's going to be somebody older than you, and they spent their whole life. You know, like say you're working with a guy at your job, and all this guy talks about, he's older than you, and all he talks about is retirement. You know, someday I'm going to retire. The day is going to come, I'm going to retire. I'll be able to retire in 5 more years. And you'll know these guys, and they live their whole life as a slave, and they just can't wait to be retired. And then finally the day comes and they get to retire. Of course, it's less so now because the days of having a pension and an actual retirement are gone. So, you know, basically if a person is living off Social Security, they're just basically looking forward to life of poverty, but at least they won't be at work. And so many times I've known of people that have lived their life, they worked for, you know, 50 years at a job, and they retire. Finally, they retire. Now they can spend their time however they want to. And then like 3, 4, 5 years after they retire, they die. They were a slave for 50 years, longing for the day of freedom, and finally they're emancipated. And they got 5 years of this entirety of their lives. They were given this amount of time from God, and they got 5 years to spend how they wanted to. Man, that's a tragedy. Sometimes guys will retire and they don't know what to do with themselves. They're just bored, you know, because they've lived their lives all this time being told what to do. Then they retire and they don't know, you know, they basically do a vacation. Then after they've been fishing for 2 weeks, then they're sick of fishing. Now what? After they went and played golf for 2 weeks, okay, well, I'm sick of playing golf. Now what am I supposed to do? We live our lives this way. And it's normalized. You know, we don't think anything about it. We're slaves. And we don't even know it. You know, we're slaves and we think we're free. They fill us, this is why they fill us with all this propaganda about the land of the free. About how you're in America, buddy, and you got freedom. And you're a bunch of slaves. We're all a bunch of slaves. We have a different master. We sell our time for $25 an hour, and then the government steals a part of that in taxes. And we're free, though. They tell us all the time, our freedom, democracy, our values of who we are, and all the rest of that nonsense, all of this. So you don't consider your slavery. So you don't consider the fact that they're actually buying your time really, really cheap. A commodity that you can't get back. Actually, you don't. And it's voluntary servitude. And again, that's just the way the entire system is structured. Because you got to pay your bills. I mean, you have kind of have no choice. You know, by and large, you kind of have no choice but to participate in this system. And it's a trap. It's a trap. People talk about why don't we, you know, how innovation has kind of gone down. You mean, yeah, you see some of it. But, you know, people say, you know, people are less inventive. You know, people less innovative. Back in the day, you know, somebody will come up with an idea and pretty soon they keep working on it. And then they got the next biggest thing. Some guy working in his garage, he's got the next biggest thing. And next thing you know, he's made it big. People don't innovate like that anymore. Why? Because they're conditioned. They start early. You know, what's school teaching you? What do they teach you in school? I don't mean the curriculum. Because we know that's 99% unmitigated bullshit. What are they teaching you, though? From the time you start, you spend 12 to 13 years, if you kept kindergarten, what do they teach you? You got to be there at this time. You use the bathroom at designated times. And if you're out wandering the halls, you got to have a hall pass or permission. The bell rings, that means you can get up and now you're allowed to go eat. The bell rings again, you better be in class. If you're not, you're tardy and you're going to be punished. The bell rings again. And after, have you ever noticed the school hours generally line up with the exact same hours that traditionally a job has? See, the idea is once you graduate from school, you just move right into the workplace and you're keeping the same hours. You're already trained. See, school is training you to be a slave so that you migrate right into it and it's nothing new. They take you in your formative years and they're training you how to spend your time. Your childhood years aren't learning to think. They're not learning to explore, not learning to understand or question or try the things of the world. No, 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 no. No, no, you don't need to know about that. You know, they're teaching you to be obedient. The bell rings. We got to go. Going to be late. Can't be late. Can't be late to school. You'll be tardy. They'll stand you in front of the class and embarrass you. And then when you graduate, we migrate you right into the workplace and you're already ready. Boom, 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 boom. You don't question it when they say, oh, it's not your break time yet. That's another 15 minutes, but just hold your piss a little longer. Don't question it. You're trained. Trained to be obedient. Trained to be a slave. Trained to give away your time. And never question the fact that they're so entitled to it. You know? Cracks me up how entitled they get to people's time. That's what I hear. Every time you hear one of these people whining and complaining about nobody wants to work anymore. I'll tell you the problem. Problem is nobody wants to work anymore. And people say that, you know, like from a morally superior standpoint. If somebody makes that statement, nobody wants to work. The implication, these people are lazy. What I hear when I hear that statement is entitlement. You know, nobody wants to work anymore. What's that to you? You know, you're not paying them to stay at home and not work for you. What do you care? What it is they feel entitled to other people's time and they can't get anybody to sell them their time for what they're willing to pay for it. You know, they can't get anybody to sell them the time. And the problem is everybody else. People say that will ridicule, mock, and complain about others being entitled and not notice the entitlement they themselves have. You see? See how that works? This is what the Bible means when they're talking about, you know, being careful about judging. It doesn't mean you can't judge. It means you be careful You need to always be looking at yourself so you understand, hey, wait a minute, what am I doing? Nobody like that to sit around and talk about, oh man, I tell you, these people out here, they just act so entitled. And then they themselves are turning around. Nobody wants to work. Nobody wants to work. Like they themselves are entitled to your time. You have to sell it to them for what they're willing to pay. In the indoctrination, the training they give you, because it's done to you in your childhood, that's when you're they call it your formative years. That's when your brain is growing and learning patterns and learning how to operate and function in the world around you. And so it's basically written in your code, so as to speak. And if you spend your time, if you find yourself in a position where you're not spending your time slaving for somebody else, you'll feel guilty. You know, like I should be doing something. I should be out here slaving for somebody. Look, we need to get into the Christian specific segment. And the point is, you know, again, the way the society's structured, you're probably going to have no choice. Most people are going to have no choice but to work for somebody. Yeah, because again, that's just the way it's structured. But you should never lose sight of the value of your time. It is yours. God gave it to you. He didn't give it to somebody else. And try to value it as much as you can. You know, because God gave us this time so that we could learn about Him and grow and things such as that. But it's yours. It's not theirs. It's not theirs. If you sell it to them to make a living, you know, that's what you've got to sell. Everything is a marketplace. If you're working for a living, you're still in business for yourself. You know that? You are still in business for yourself. It's just that the only product you have found to sell is your time. And so you are selling it to them. That's all it is. It's a commodity, and you're selling it to them. You may think you're just a wagey working for a living, but actually you're in business for yourself. Everybody's in business. You're selling your time. That's the only thing you have found to sell is your time. So you're selling your time to these people. But, you know, don't let them shoplift it, you know, value it, treasure it, look at it, you know, as something that has value. Look for a better way, how you do spend your time, what time you get to yourself, what do you do with it? And remember that they're not entitled to it. You can always go somewhere else. Or if you find the opportunity to break free for goodness sakes, break free. If it doesn't work out, you can always go back to selling your time. But you are in business for yourself. You may just be selling your time. But if you're pretty good at that, then maybe you could replace time with another more tangible commodity and save your time for yourself. Like I said, we've got to get into the Christian specific segment. Let's keep on rolling. We're just halfway through. Let's keep on going. You know what to do. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Time and time again, when you keep studying your Bible and looking into these things and dedicating your heart and trying to expand your wisdom, knowledge, and understanding in these things, you really do come to realize that more and more answers than so many people realize are here in the Bible. One of the things I enjoy doing, and by the way, I'm going to try to get to a couple different things today. I think we'll have time. It just depends on how it goes. But one of the things I like doing is to look at things from different angles all the time and apply. Because I think there's always deeper truths in the different things we read in the Bible. And this is why, and I always say this, that, you know, everything is interconnected in the Bible. Things in the New Testament are connected to the Old. Things in one book are connected to things in another book, and so on and so forth. That's why you've got to read the entirety of it and study it and dedicate yourself to that, because then you start making those connections. If you limit yourself to only reading snippets here and there, or just listening to somebody go on about, you know, one little piece here and there, you really miss out. Again, I know a lot of people, you know, it's very difficult to have the time to do that. And I think that's one of the things, you know, I'm trying to accomplish here, is knowing that people don't have the time. So, you know, to try to at least share that, so maybe it'll help someone out. I want to start off, we're actually going to read a couple different verses from the Bible, and look at, this is about looking at things from a completely different angle. If we look at Romans chapter 6, we're just doing verse 23, and you're going to be, virtually all of you, because again, this segment is for people who are already Christian believers, but even if you're not and you're listening, you're going to be familiar with this verse. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. Now, I can virtually guarantee you that pretty much all of you, including myself, when you hear that verse, you read that verse, you interpret it, you know, as a warning about hell. Eternal life is through Jesus Christ. The wages of sin are, you're going to wind up in hell. You know, that seems pretty straightforward. And that's the way I'm sure every, you know, like I say, pretty much everybody reads that and interprets it that way. And that's not incorrect, I don't believe, to interpret it like that. But I'd like to pose the question, what if this truth here, what if this applies more universally? Let's keep going. I want to go over. Now we're going to jump to the Old Testament, and we're going to look at Deuteronomy chapter 4. Let's do verse 40. I think I just said Deuteronomy. Anyway, y'all know. y'all know what I mean. Y'all know the one. That big, long, complicated. Let's see. Chapter 4, verse 40. Of definitely not Deuteronomy. It's almost as bad as when I have to try to pronounce some of these regions and names you come across in the Old Testament. Thou shalt keep therefore his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee this day, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee, and that thou mayest prolong thy days upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee forever. I want to plant that in your mind, keeping his statutes, his laws, that thy days upon the earth, you may prolong thy days upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee forever. Finally, I want to jump back to the New Testament. We're going to look in the book of John, chapter 5, verse 14. Now, the background here, before we read the verse, is we're all pretty much familiar with the story of the guy laying by the pool, and he couldn't get up and get into the water in time to be healed. And Jesus, you know, heals this guy. You know, then and Jesus asks the man, do you want to be whole? Because the guy had been laying there, and Jesus said, do you want to be whole? And the guy, you know, do you want to be healed, in other words? And the man says, well, yeah, I can't get into the water. Anyway, Jesus heals him. Again, y'all are probably pretty familiar with that. But if we look, we skip forward and we look at verse 14. Afterward, Jesus findeth him. This is the same guy that he healed. So a little later, he comes across this same guy. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. Now, when Jesus had healed him, he told him, don't tell anyone who did it. Then Jesus sees him later on and tells him, you better quit. You need to quit sinning, or something worse than where you were is going to befall you. By the way, the guy then, his response to that was to run and tell the Jews that it was Jesus. Now, circling back to the wages of sin being death, and applying this from a different perspective, Again, that's not to say the original perspective was wrong, but what if we apply it more broadly? If we look at the verses that we've read, these three different passages that we read, what if sin is also very physically bad for us? In Deuteronomy, it says, you know, to keep God's statutes, it tells us that your days may be prolonged on the earth. And we know we're not just talking about sacrificing bulls here or something. We're talking about following God's natural order, God's rules in this creation he has made. Following his law, statutes, not rebelling against the natural order, not rebelling against God's laws and what he has established in his creation, that it may go well with you. You may live, you and your children, you may live a long life. The Bible, it's presented, it's a good thing to live, to be old, a man who's righteous and he lives old and full of years before he passes on from this life. And perhaps there's a message here. Perhaps sin is literally leads to death, like physical death, not just going to hell death, but it leads to physical death. It leads to a very unhealthy life, to actual physical maladies breaking you down. Now, I want to be sure we're clear here. I'm not saying that all sicknesses, like if somebody's gets really sick or something, or that is because they've done something bad. And we're not saying that, that's not to say that if something bad happens to somebody, then they must have done something wrong. You know, the entire book of Job dispels that notion that every time something bad happens to somebody, well, they did something to deserve it. We're not saying that. But I think one of the things, if we look at this in a more broad sense, it's quite possible, and I do believe this to be correct, that there's a warning hidden in there that actually, even in this physical life, in our flesh, sin leads to bad outcomes. It leads to, it shortens our life. It actually makes you unhealthy. Now, obviously, you know, if you're mainlining heroin, that's a pretty obvious negative health consequence. But, you know, I think just the pressure, the stress that sin puts on you. When you have cancer, when you like to sound like old people, when you got the cancer, like, for instance, if you get cancer and you look into it, they say that, you know, stress, you're supposed to, one of the things they tell you to do is try not to be stressed. Try to avoid stressful situations, people stressing you out, because stress makes it worse. Stress makes the cancer worse. I think there's probably quite a bit of truth to that. But what's more stressful than sin? You get baited in with the promise of these pleasurable things, or it'll be great, it'll be fun, and it never leads to any of those things. It's always a deception. It's always a lie. There may be some momentary pleasure involved, but it always winds up being destructive. And because you're not achieving that, you know, for instance, you know, if you think you're going to find some sort of happiness in cheating somebody, you know, to gain wealth, if you make money your God and you chase after money, and you think that if you just attain enough of it, you're going to find happiness, you're going to find satisfaction. And then no matter how much of it you get, that satisfaction, that feeling of final peace and contentment is always just out of your reach. And you don't know any difference, so you keep chasing your false god of money. I must not have enough because I don't feel content enough. I don't feel content yet. I don't feel happy yet. I don't feel complete yet. So you just keep chasing it. How stressful is that got to be? You keep chasing this false god of money, and no matter how much you get, it doesn't. Where's the contentment? Where's the peace? I thought this was going to be the answer to all my problems. Stresses you out. What if, when we read the wages of sin is death, that doesn't just mean the spiritual death? What if there's another deeper meaning here connected to the other verses we've read, where Jesus warned the guy, you better quit sinning or something worse is going to happen to you? might not have just been a warning only, I should say, been a warning that you could wind up going to hell. It could be a warning you could wind up worse than crippled up and not being able to get into the water. If you connect it to, if you follow God's statutes, if you follow his laws, precepts, if you follow these things, you will live a longer day. When you think about the fact, you know, Americans are some of the most unhealthy people on the face of the planet, minus people that are obviously suffering, you know, from extreme malnutrition and stuff. But Americans, if you say, would just say in the developed world, let's do that. But if you look at like the more or less developed world, you know, Americans are some of the most unhealthy people on the face of the planet. Now, you know, granted, they're poisoning our food. You can't get around that. I don't care how you live. If somebody's slipping poison into everything you eat, obviously that's going to have negative health effects. But I think Americans are probably some of the most sinful people on the planet, if I'm being honest. And maybe there's also a correlation there. This sinful way, the sinful mindset that people have. You know, maybe there's something there. So maybe there's something to that as far as being a nation of very unhealthy people. Lifespans are decreasing now. You made all this progress, and then now it's going the other direction. Again, part of that, no doubt, is because they're poisoning our food. But what if sin? I mean, because you think about it. When you read in the Bible, New Testament, Old Testament, whatever, like you read in the New Testament, I mean, by and large, they didn't have doctors, and what they had was pretty sketchy. They for sure didn't have modern medicine. So, you know, for people to live a full life, they had to be, it just stands to reason, they had to be pretty in tune with what accounted to living a healthy lifestyle. They weren't going to the gym. They lived a life. You had to walk everywhere. I just think that there really could be a connection. Sin stresses you out. Sin is going to leave you continually frustrated. Maybe there is a warning here that sin actually is going to literally shorten your lifespan and lead to death. Sin weakens you spiritually. But why do we, even as believers, we never consider the possibility that sin weakens us physically? We know that sin, it drains. It's a drain on your spirit. It's a drain on your soul. But we never consider the fact that it could have a negative effect on our literal physical, on our physical bodies. It's not a stretch because our physical body, I mean, it's all connected, right? I mean, it's a part of who we are right now. I think it just makes sense. Now, I said I wanted to get into a couple different things today. So we're changing gears. We're moving on. Let's go back to our Bible real quick. And we're going to look in the book of Matthew, chapter 12, verses 43 through 45. And this is Jesus speaking. It says, "When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return unto my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh with himself seven other spirits, more wicked than himself. And they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it also be unto this wicked generation." Also, if we look in Luke chapter 11, verses 21 and 22, Jesus says, "When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him, he taketh from him all his armor wherein he trusted, and divideth his spoils." And we think about the context of this and talking about unclean spirits. I think we misunderstand a lot of, you know, things in the Bible as far as spiritual stuff, because we can't help it. We've been influenced by movies, you know, by Hollywood movies. You know, what is a demon? What is there a difference between a demon and an unclean spirit or an evil spirit or these things? You know, I mean, for instance, we are all familiar with when Jesus came upon, you know, upon the demon possessed man, and they said their name was Legion because there was many of these demons in him, and they begged to be cast out into the swine. You know, you're familiar with that. But what's a demon? What constitutes a demon? And I think for most people, you think, well, those are the, you know, fallen angels, you know, the ones that followed Satan. But I'm not sure that's correct, because we read elsewhere it says, you know, that one of God's angels, you know, was detained by the Prince of Persia. And I think the Prince of, you know, obviously it wasn't a man detaining an angel. That wouldn't be possible. So if the Prince of Persia is actually one of these angels that followed Satan, this doesn't sound like some Hollywood, you know, crawling up the ceiling, demon sort of thing. I think that there's probably, these are other things. They're related and they come from the same place. But I suspect, and this is just my opinion, you can take it or leave it, this is just my opinion I'm giving here. But I think these are other things. They're not necessarily, you're not necessarily dealing with one of these angels that rebelled with Satan. Something else they generate and put upon men. But I was thinking about these things and about, like, when you read about these possessions and Jesus casting these different entities that people fell victim to, casting them out. And, you know, I've always said, you know, old sayings tend to be true. That's how they become old sayings. If there's no truth in them, people don't repeat them. And I was thinking about this and applying this to superstition. You know, superstition, you would think that's, superstition is like an un-Christian, ungodly thing. But if we think of superstition as just things that, you know, have been passed down to us for hundreds and thousands, you know, for thousands of years, and people have these superstitions. Again, the fact that we still are aware of these different superstitions means there could be an element in truth to them, you know, how you can apply them. I was thinking of this the other day. You're probably well aware of the superstition, of this belief, you know, that, like, there's certain entities. You know, if you think of, like, the characterization of a vampire. But I've heard this belief also applied to other things, you know, evil spirits and things like that. And the idea that they can't come in your house unless you invite them in. You know, you run into that, you know, in a story. These evil spirits, an evil spirit or these different, say, demonic entities, they try to come in people's houses, and the superstition is, you know, sometimes they'll disguise their voice to sound like, you know, a loved one, a relative. Oh, it's me. Open the door. Let me in. And the whole trick here is they can't come in your house unless you invite them in. You've got to invite them in. This is the superstition that, you know, this evil spirit will come around and knock on your door. They can't come in your house unless you invite it in. So it tries to use all these words. It disguises its voice, hides and deceives you of what it really is, so that you'll open the door to your house and let them in. What if there's a certain amount of truth to that? I'm not talking necessarily about literally having an entity banging on the door of your house. What if you can apply this superstition? What if you can apply this to our spiritual knowledge? In other words, we read about people getting unclean spirits cast out. You know, Jesus would cast out these unclean spirits. They had these demons in them. How did they get there? You see, if you think of this superstition and apply it spiritually. In other words, I'm not promoting superstition. I want to make sure I'm being clear here. It's stuck around this long for a reason. It wasn't just a funny story someone made up and then everybody just kept holding on to it. I think there has to be a grain of truth to it. But over the years, we probably don't understand that grain of truth. Remember we just read, you know, a spirit gets cast out and it wanders around and it comes back and re-inhabits where he got cast out of. Also, Jesus warned, you know, a strong man is able, if a strong man guards his house, his goods are safe. But if he's not careful, he can get overcome. What if you open the door and let them in? I think these spirits, and again, we talk about this, please don't visualize these ridiculous Hollywood movies. These spirits, you know, these unclean spirits, these entities, I'm talking about in the Bible, not, again, not in some Hollywood movie version. It's in our Bible, so we know this is correct. Jesus was dealing with these things. How do they get there? What if the only way they get there is if you invite them into your house, not your literal physical house that you live in. I'm talking about your spiritual house. Though I referenced what Jesus said about a strong man guarding his palace. What if you have to invite them into you to live with you? You know, it's written to test the spirits. We're supposed to test the spirits because not every spirit you may run into is from God. This is in the New Testament. It's written, test the spirits, because not every spirit is from God. You see, they're going to try to trick you. They're going to disguise their voice. You're going to think they're someone they're not. They're trying to get you to open the door and let them in. Because once you let them in, they're going to be hard to get off. I was thinking about this. And what if you think of it, you do a comparison, you read these stories, you hear these stories in the news about homeless people that just start squatting in somebody's house. You know? Back in the day, you know, when you hear someone talking about a scam, and the victim of the scam, the people that get targeted, will be referred to as marks. You know where that term comes from? I do. Or at least this is the version I heard. Don't hit me with some, well, actually. Back in the day, you know, hobos would ride the trains, and they would wind up in different towns. And these were essentially bums that rode the trains from town to town. And, you know, they'd go around and look for a place and give them something to eat because, you know, they didn't have no welfare back then. And these hobos would go around towards, you know, up to people's houses to, you know, ask them if they had some food they could eat. And anybody that said, yeah, sure, hold on, and they gave them something to eat, the hobos would go out there and make a mark on the curb or something in front of their house, make a mark somewhere, you know, in the front of their house, so the other hobos would know if they saw the mark, that's somebody that'll give you food. And so the person that gives, hear me now, when the person gives, the hobo that comes up and says, hey, can you give me something to eat? When they do that, next thing they know, every day they've got all these hobos lining up, knocking on their door. Hey, can I have something to eat? And they don't understand, where are these hobos? They're spawning. I have got hobos spawning in my yard. Why are these hobos now spawning in my yard? Because there's a mark. You see, you let the first one up there. You gave the first one the time of day. And now they made a mark out there, so all of them come. Think about this in relation to Jesus' warning about the spirit that goes out and arid places after being kicked out. He goes and gathers up a bunch. He comes back and finds the place all cleaned up and ready for him to come squat in. Notice when Jesus said that, what happens? A spirit gets cast out. It goes and makes a round. And then it eventually decides to come back and check it out. Where he got cast out of before. What's he checking out? There's no one guarding it. You see, the evil spirit, the unclean spirit, it got kicked out. But the person never did put up a guard. So the door is wide open to the house. So the homeless spirit wanders around. Comes up here and finds your door wide open. And hey, you cleaned the place up for me. this is such a good deal. I'm going to go get my buddies down here. I'm going to go get the other hobos. I'm going to go get the other homeless people. And we're all going to camp out now in your living room. Good luck getting rid of them now. And the state of the man is worse than what it began. Because first off, he started off with one bum squatting in his living room. Now he's got a whole army of them in there. They've spawned in his living room. I think it's important to be aware of this so that you can be on your guard. Again, it's written, you know, test the spirits because not every one of them is from God. They're trying to get in. They're going to try to trick you. They're going to sound real good. They're trying to get you to open the door and invite them in. They can't come in. You know, they can't come in unless you let them in. Unless you invite them in. And then they come in and they squat. I mean, look, people hear this and they mock and they say, man, he's crazy. But I'm going to tell you what. If you're not aware of these things, you're liable to leave your door wide open. You're liable to get deceived and wind up inviting something in. And the state is going to get much worse. You're going to wind up with things getting progressively worse. These unclean spirits. Think about the guy that I referenced earlier. We're all familiar with the story of Jesus casting out the legion of demons, of unclean spirits that the guy had, and they went into the swine. You know, how did he wind up with so many? I think it's quite likely he started off with one, and it got cozy. And then more came in. You know, like I said, it's like homeless people squatting on your property. Pretty soon the word gets around, you're a mark. And things get progressively worse. And as they get progressively worse, you know, the state of the man obviously gets progressively worse because it gets harder to clean it up. That's what I was trying to say. I'm sorry, I kind of lost my thought there for a minute. It gets harder to fix it. It's going to be easier to kick out one than it is 100. It's easier yet to keep that door shut. And when it's a banging on there and saying, hey, check this out. Hey, hey, it's me. Hey, hey. Be careful what you let in. Be careful what you let in. I think this is going to be reflected in sin itself. Let's take pornography as an example. This is an example we can use that I think people can understand. You know, like the first time you see pornography, you know, you're probably a young man, and you know, it's probably something like, you know, a picture of a woman topless, you know. See, first look at titties. And it's just like, oh my gosh, you know. But if you continue to view pornography, I can guarantee you a picture of a woman with no top on ain't going to be where you wind up. That may be where you start. That ain't going to be where you wind up with. You're going to wind up in this way off there, I don't know, weirdo, just extreme shit. We know that people get addicted to this, but if you think of it on a spiritual sense, so you start letting more and more of them in, you opened the door. Now they're inviting their friends. You started off with topless titties, and now you're watching somebody poop in somebody's mouth or some other disgusting crap. And now you're so far in, you're having a hard time getting rid of it. See what I'm saying? Having a hard time getting rid of it because you let them in and then they got comfy and you let them get comfy. So then they told their friends, hey, there's a mark here. This guy lets you on in. And things get progressively worse and worse. And the worse they get, the harder it is to come back from it. Guard yourself. Guard yourself. Not every thought. Think about this. It's going to, if you link, why did our ancestors come up with these ideas? Where did they come from? And if you link this to a spiritual understanding, it disguises its voice. It tries to trick you. anything to get you to open the door. Every thought, what if perhaps every thought that pops into your head isn't yours? It might hear your own voice. I don't want to sound schizo. I'm not, take your meds, schizo here. Be careful what you entertain, you know. Every thought that comes to you, every idea that comes to you may not be your own. It's a deception. Oh, start considering this. Hey, what about this? Stop and ask yourself, wait, where is this coming from? You know, why should I consider that? Where is this coming from? Where did this just come up out of the blue? They're tricking you. They try to get you to open the door. They got to get invited in. They can't just come busting in. They got to get invited in. Then they can set up shop. They can squat in your living room. What's truly frightening is when you consider that the average person today just walks around with their door open. They do. People just open all kinds of crap. You hear people come up with just ridiculous nonsense. People just walking around completely, 100% spiritually unaware. They're walking around. They leave forget guarding the house. Their door is open. They're just out wandering around doing whatever. And we wonder why the state of man today is so dire. Guard your house. Guard your house. Be careful what you let in. You know what I mean? Be careful what ideas you entertain. You know, it's good to think through things. It's good to work through things. But be careful of what ideas you entertain. If you see something or somebody comes to you with something and you know right off the bat that it's not right. You know what I'm saying? Somebody comes up to you with some idea or some notion and you know right off the bat that isn't right. Don't entertain it. You know, don't. Be careful what you let in. They try to trick you. They want you to open that door. Be careful what kind of ideas you entertain. Be careful what kind of thoughts you let start running through your head. Guard your house. Be your strong man. These things are trying to get in. They're trying to work their way in. Again, I'm not trying to sound schizo here or anything like that, but I'm telling you, you've got to be on your guard. You know, just wandering through this world and there's nothing out there that's going to try to trip you up. These things are real. Not the Hollywood version. These things are real. And they're going to try to trip you up. They're going to try to trick you. They're going to try to get you to let them in so they can get cozy and comfy. And then when they get cozy and comfy and you get used to them being around, it's not going to stay that way. You know, it's not. It's not going to be static. They're going to go and bring friends along with them. And the state of the man will be worse than he began. We'll wrap up on that note. I appreciate you joining. I hope you got something out of it, especially the Christian specific segment. Again, I appreciate y'all joining me. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.